Thursday, December 10th, 2020. This is the Hermetic Hour. I'm your host, Poke Runyon. And tonight we present a report on Rivendell, our church and order headquarters in Silverado, California, where we have our magical temple and outdoor henge. Rivendell just survived its third near disaster in this century last week. Thanks to the God and the Goddess, the Archangels Raphael and Michael, Peralda, Queen of the Sylphs, and Zephyrus, the Wind, and the Sylphs, and the Salamanders, and our local fire department, we at Rivendell and Rivendell itself survived without damage, while 17 other homes in our town were destroyed. So this week, the Hermetic Hour will honor and appreciate its home and get a history of the place and its unique community. So if you want to find out about America's magical headquarters, stay with us and I'll be your tour guide. Now, you may recall last week that I had been evacuated. I was forced to evacuate from Rivendell, and I was broadcasting, you know, from my wife's home in Hawthorne, Rocket City, and wasn't really sure whether Rivendell was still standing, because when I left at 10 o'clock in the morning on Wednesday, the flames were rising up, apparently, right behind my house. And actually, they were a little further away, but it being night, you know, it looked like they were a lot closer. So what I could do, in the middle of the night, the power was off, and the fire department was knocking at the door, and they said, "You got to get out of here." And so I just, all I could do was grab my cat, Blackie, and get him in the carrier and get down to the car and take off. And they flagged me through a whole line of fire trucks so I could get out of the canyon. And so I wasn't really sure last, when we went on last week, I wasn't really sure whether we had a place to go home to or not. And sure enough, we did. Now, the story of America's Rivendell actually begins 13 years before I acquired the Silverado property back in 1997. Back in April of 1984, I took my three-day Holy Guardian Angel retreat in the Mount Salvat Temple in Pasadena, California. Now, Mount Salvat had been our temple and headquarters since 1974. The Magic of Solomon was filmed there. RHGA retreat is similar to a shamanic vision quest. The aspirant stays in the temple for 3 days, fasting and invoking not one, but three guardian angels, one for the ascendant, one for the planetary ruler, and, most importantly, the one who represents God in all our incarnations and overrules the inclinations of our natal horoscope. In my case, this holiest of HGAs made several predictions and gave me assignments. He said I would acquire an estate where I would establish the 7 degrees of Craterapola and teach my students and colleagues. Well, 10 years later, I was able to retire from industry and begin my search for a new home and headquarters. Mount Salvat was a beautiful property and temple, and it had served us well for over a decade, but it was too small to serve our growing membership and guest list. And yet I still wanted a retreat in a remote area. We had started in Topanga Canyon in 1970, sharing the Moonfire Temple overlooking Santa Monica Bay, and I yearned for a similar remote setting. Let me digress a little bit and talk about that. Actually, before I founded the OTA, I had been exploring and I had been searching for this Moonfire Temple. I don't know how many of you remember a Paul Newman film called Harper. It was a detective movie. But in Harper, which came out back in About 1964, 65, something like that. It was set in Southern California, in the Los Angeles area. And in the film, there was a temple on top of a mountain overlooking the Pacific. And this was very, very interesting architecture. This temple had a big opening in the center, and a sort of an island in the middle of a pool. The island was like an eye, and it was a fire pit. This was a fascinating structure. And, in fact, it was pretty obvious from the fact that this was a low-budget film, and it was pretty obvious that they had borrowed this temple. It wasn't built for the movie. They'd obviously borrowed this temple. And so back in 1966 and 67, when I was in my motorcycle phase, I was exploring, looking for this temple. I knew it, and I had heard that it was in Topanga Canyon. So I started exploring around Topanga Canyon and asking questions of the locals. Oh, yeah, they knew about it. And, in fact, they said that you can find out about it at the Moonfire Inn. Well, the Moonfire Inn at that time, and of course now at this time, this was 1966, 67. This was during the tail end of the psychedelic flower children era, the hippie era. And so the Moonfire Inn was a ramshackled old place hanging out over the gorge. It was cantilevered out over the gorge in Topanga. And this was a very, if you kind of like that hippie culture, this was a very romantic place, because it was made of old driftwood. It was kind of ramshackled, and yet it was cantilevered, with steel beams hanging out over the out over the Topanga Gorge, and it was all vegetarian, and had beautiful young girls in tie-dyed T-shirts, and nothing much else, serving vegetarian menus, and this was the public outlet for the Moonfire Temple, which was back up in the hills, overlooking the Santa Monica Bay. Anyway, I found out from the girls at the Moonfire that the temple and of course the Moonfire Inn were owned by Louis Marvin, a very, very wealthy fellow who was divided his time between British Honduras, Belize, which is a place I'd also been, and here in Southern California. So I went from the Moonfire Inn on my motorcycle all the way back up into the hills and found the Moonfire Temple. But Louis, the owner of the temple, he wasn't there at the time. So I explored it, and it looked like a flying saucer had landed this on the top of the hill. This was a fascinating place. And so I started to make weekly visits to the temple. I was living in Manhattan Beach. I had a little apartment in Manhattan Beach. Every weekend, every Saturday or so, I'd get on my motorcycle and go up and visit the temple. And sure enough, Louis was up there on one of my visits. And it was a little bit hostile at first, when I pulled up to the temple in my motorcycle and all. Hey, he was a little hostile, but then he noticed my fraternity ring. And he realized that we'd both been in the same college fraternity. He was at Duke, and I was at Stetson in Florida. But we were both in the same fraternity. And so we began to hit it off and realized that we had a lot in common. Louis except that Louis was an ardent vegetarian, and I began to find out about his philosophy and all, and he was such an ardent vegetarian and animal rights activist, and he had even sneaked into slaughterhouses and made movies of animals being slaughtered, and he was quite an activist. At one time, in a protest, he took a live camel into McDonald's one time in a protest. Louis was really a delightful character. And he also, in later years, he spent much of his time writing music, composing music for animals and zoos. He thought that animals and zoos needed music to keep them sane. But Louis, when we started the OTA in 1970, and we moved into Tobago Canyon, rented a place up in Glenview, the northern end of the canyon. And of course, we made a kind of a deal with Louis that when he was in British Honduras, we could use his temple on the top of the mountain. And oh boy, this was terrific. So here's our little organization just getting started, and we got this wonderful, magnificent temple on top of this mountain that we can use for ceremonies, and that was just really delightful. But then I remember in Topanga, this was the first experience I had with California wildfires. I was renting this house up in Glenview, up the northern end of the canyon, and this forest fire started. This was 1970. This tremendous forest fire started, and here I was up on top of the roof of this house in Glenview, with a wall of flame on either side of me, rising up on either side of me, and I'm up on the roof with this limp garden hose, and this huge wall of flame on either side of me. And I heard a sound that I had not heard since I was 7 years old. And it was the sound of many, many, not just four, but many Pratt & Whitney 2,000 horsepower engines, aircraft engines. And the reason why I had heard this sound in 1941, when I was 7 years old, is because that was that Pearl Harbor morning, and all of the B-17s at MacDill Air Force Base flew over my house in St. Petersburg on their way out to California, and that was 1941, and I was hearing that same sound. Here I was up on the roof in Glenville. And Topanga, and with a flame on either rising on either side of me, and I hear this same sound. Many, many Pratt & Whitney engines. You know, there's nothing else like it. It's just a sort of a rumble in the air. And one B-17 came on one side of the house, and a privateer, that's a B-24 Liberator with a straight tail. And the privateer came on the other side, and they both dropped borate on the fires on either side of me and completely extinguished the fires. And there I was up there on the roof of that garden hose, and I thought, oh, boy, you know, saved by Pratt & Whitney. And anyway, so that was our first experience with fire, but that's the reason why we moved out of Topanga and moved to Pasadena, was that fire. You know, I thought, well, my gosh, you know, I'm not gonna stay here in Topanga. But I always have a fond memory of us getting started in Topanga Canyon with the OTA. I really, you know, with Louis Temple and all, Topanga Canyon was a very romantic place, really romantic. Now, let's see. as I said, our HDA retreat was similar to a shamanic vision quest, and the aspirant stayed in the temple for 3 days, fasting and invoking not one but three guardian angels. And in my case, the holiest HGA made several predictions, gave me assignments. He said I would acquire an estate where I would establish the 7 degrees of credit rapport and teach my students and colleagues. So, 10 years later, I was able to retire from industry and begin my search for a new home and headquarters. Mont-Sauvat in Pasadena was a beautiful property and temple, and it had served us well for over a decade. But it was too small to serve our growing membership and guest list. Yet I still wanted to retreat in a remote area. We started in Topanga, sharing the Moonfire Temple overlooking Santa Monica Bay, and I yearned for a similar remote setting. I even explored the Lost Coast region above San Francisco. And that was a fantastic adventure in itself, because one of our Farfarian members, Jim Macy, and his wife Lily, they had a place up there in the Lost Coast, and I visited them, and I was thinking maybe that would be a possibility we could settle up there, because there's a lot of occult people, and that was one of the places where the hippies took refuge, you know, at the end of the hippie era. Was up there in the Lost Coast. And it's an isolated area and in the Redwoods and whatever, and fascinating. But, however, I couldn't find a place up there that was suitable at all. And so we finally settled on Silverado Canyon in the Cleveland National Forest. How did I find Silverado? Silverado is really not very well known, even in Southern California. The whole town is tucked away inside the Cleveland National Forest, and it's full of quaint little houses and with a lot of character, and it's kind of in a way kind of reminds you of the Shire, you know. And of course, I named our place Rivendell, but also Silverado is kind of like the Shire. They're quaint little houses, and a lot of houses have names. And I used to enjoy just hiking around Silverado and seeing the houses with the little gnome statues and all the Silverado. But the way I got introduced to Silverado was my friend Ed Fitch. I guess by this time we can call him by his real name, which is Sitch, but he used to go by the pen name Ed Fitch. But anyway, Ed was a aerospace engineer and also a gardenerian elder and a good friend of mine for years. And Ed was a kind of a dedicated spelunker. If there was a hole in the ground anywhere, he'd go into it. He'd find it and go into it. Well, out in Silverado, there were old silver mines, and the old Blue Line silver mines. And so Ed had heard about the mines out there, and he wanted to explore them. So Ed got his kids, and I got my daughter Vivian, and we went on mine exploring expeditions. And the Three Sisters mines in Silverado, which we hiked up to and went into, they're very dangerous. Looking back on it, I don't think we ever should have even gone in there, because eventually about 10 years later, a couple of teenage kids were killed in that Three Sisters mine. But we went way back up in there, back up where the mine turned into a cavern, and it was quite an exciting adventure. But it introduced me to the little town of Silverado, which was down at the foot of the hill where the Three Sisters mines was. And so I began to consider homes in Silverado Canyon. And in 1997, I purchased the home and grounds of what we have named Rivendell, a three-story frame house built upon a hillside on an acre of ground with a creek running through it. Rivendell has a swimming pool, a large yard for seasonal ceremonies, and a parking lot for guests. And when we bought the place, it had been set up as a triplex. Let me talk a little bit about how Rivendell came about. It was originally built in 1941, a frame house, and it was bought in the end of the 1960s and the beginning of the 1970s by a fellow who said he was an architect. I think he was more of an amateur architect. And what he did was he remodeled the old frame house and put a big cathedral ceiling foyer on the front and put in the swimming pool and converted, landscaped the place and converted this old frame house into what he kind of jokingly called the Playboy Mansion of the Canyon. He was a kind of a Randy happy-go-lucky version of Hugh Hefner, and he had this place, and it was the party place in the canyon, and until of course he married one of his playmates, and then things started to go bad, but the place, you know, it was built originally in 1941, so there was a lot of old stuff in the house. There was new stuff and old stuff, and the house was kind of a mixture of the old and the new, It was built on a hillside on an acre of ground with a creek running through it. Rivendell has a swimming pool, a large yard for seasonal ceremonies, and a parking lot for guests. When we bought the place, it had been set up as a triplex. The owner was kind of going downhill financially in one thing or another, and he's going through a divorce, and he set the house up as a triplex. Now, we planned to convert the downstairs apartment into a temple and build an astronomical observatory above the third floor. But before any of this could be done, we had to save the house from a coming flood. It was the year of El Nino, and the rains were coming. I now realized why the place had been priced so reasonably. The creek had undercut the foundation of the house. If we did not reinforce it, a flood might cause the house to slide into the creek, and a flood was coming. Fortunately, the people who had sold me the house were at least good enough to warn me about it. I had about a month to get it done. We pumped two ready-mix truckloads of concrete under the seawall and shored up the bridge before the torrential rains of El Nino arrived. But my reinforcement did not stop a spring from erupting behind my hillside bedroom and threatening to flood the house. I spent several nights sucking on a garden hose to siphon out the water collecting behind my bedroom. Finally, in a few days' break between storms, I managed to dig a sump and install a pump to save the second story of the house. The storm's rainfall was so heavy that our little creek became a roaring tyrant, rising up within inches of our bridge's deck. We could hear the boulders rolling down the creek bed at night. Boom, boom, boom. Eventually, we had to completely rebuild the bridge. And when we converted the downstairs apartment into a temple, we installed a sump and a sump pump under the floor. This temple had its own bathroom, making it a better facility for retreats. It was not arranged for a soul door, and so path workings were done with an overhead mirror, as shown in our video, The Rites of Magic. The soul door at Mont Sauvat can be seen in our path working video. Of course, we named our new home Rivendell after the home of the elves in Tolkien's Lord of the Rings. And it did resemble the final film version of Rivendell. When you crossed the bridge from the parking lot, you passed between two guardian statues and faced an ascending staircase leading up to the manse, very much like the film version. We put a sign up over the archway to the bridge, Rivendell, where elves yet dwell in glades beneath the misty fell. Rivendell really was an estate. We had an acre of ground, several sycamore and oak trees, and one 90-foot pine tree, which we eventually lost, and erected a statue of the goddess on the stump. We continued improving the compound. We built a pump house for the pool machinery and erected an observatory crow's nest above the roof, and then a flight of steps leading down to the creek, and finally a gazebo in the upper patio and a flight of stairs leading down to the pool deck. Most of these features can be seen in our videos, Rites of Magic and the Dark Mirror of Magic, and also Beyond Lemuria. I should also mention our stained glass windows. The decorative side windows in the house were the work of local artist Hollis Phillips. So when we wanted stained glass for the temple, I called on Alice, and we worked together on one showing our Tenitra moon goddess symbol and another with the OTA seven-pointed star. At the time, Alice was living and working at Wildcat Ranch in Silverado. Unfortunately, Wildcat Ranch was destroyed in the recent fire, but Alice was not living there. The stained glass window in our temple's common room is a real antique from France and a piece of local occult history. It was from the sorcerer's shop in 1970s Los Angeles. It was featured in Penthouse magazine, illuminating the beautiful form of a local witch lying bare on a bare rug, B-A-R-E on a B-E-A-R rug. When the witch left the occult shop, the window went with her, and she passed it on to us. Since we have been at Rivendell, we have performed nearly 40 seasonal ceremonies, including our Halloween Samhain ceremony, which is now performed. In other states as well. We use the same portable wood henge we erected at Bandido Campground in Los Angeles National Forest in the 1990s. I can recall Bardic Circle around the campfire at Bandido with very honored Frater Memnonides reciting the entire text of Prince of Cotton and the Magic Bow from memory. Oh boy, those were the days. And Frater Arian and myself used to entertain people in Bandido with our exercise of putting up a tent without following the directions, and that was hilarious. And I can also remember the exciting adventures with the bears out in Bandido. I used to give, and when we go out there before we set up in Bandido, I would always give the rattlesnake and the bear lecture. And people used to joke about it. But, you know, God, folks are going to give his bad rattlesnake and bear lecture. And they laughed. They laughed at me about my bear and rattlesnake lecture until about 3 o'clock in the morning when the bears got into the camp and started banging around in the dumpsters and all in the campground. They didn't laugh at that point. Now, fire has always been a concern in Silverado, but floods seem to be our main danger. In 1968, there was a flood that nearly washed away the town. And again, in just a few years of the new century, we had another El Nino deluge and considerable damage, but Rivendell was ready for that one. A few years later, we had a a close fire, and an evacuation. I left with my cat Cyrano and stayed with Ed Sitch and Dr. X for over a week until I could return. Now, this latest threat was even worse. Edison had turned off the power at 7 in the evening on Wednesday, and by 10 o'clock, the flames were rising up on the hill behind Rivendell. The fire department told me to get out. I grabbed my cat Blackie, got him into the carrier, and headed for Lauren's place in Hawthorne. 4 days later, I returned to find the house undamaged, except for the back gate where the fire department had forced it to get in. I thanked the god and the goddess and the angels, the winds and the elementals, especially the sylphs and the salamanders. We had survived again. Rivendell lives and will continue as America's house of magic. So, happy holidays and good magic month. And I'd like to, we got a lot of time left. So I'd like to tell you some of my adventures in Silverado, because it really is a fascinating place. And, of course, you know, once I moved in and got settled in, I started weekly hiking all around, you know, around down in the National Forest and up behind my house and then all. And then and just hiking around the town just to see the quaint little houses, you know, and meet the people or whatever. And also, there are a couple little side canyons from Silverado. One of them is Black Star, and the other was Lab Canyon. And Lab Canyon, which is off to the north of Silverado, Lab Canyon was the home of a German cultist, nudist, nature cultist named Wolfgang. And Wolfgang was not only a nature boy like Eden Abbas, you know, remember the song. There was a boy, a strange enchanted boy, and boy he wandered far over land and sea. Yeah, well, anyway. So Wolfgang was not only was he a nature cultist, but he was a nudist, but he was also an engineer. And Wolfgang, a couple of things we never have proved it, but we suspected that Ed Sitch's wife Janine had once belonged to Wolfgang's cult, and she knew it. I think we asked her about it one time, and she kind of evaded us on that. But anyway, Wolfgang developed a tower. This little tower, and I finally bought Wolfgang's tower, but I never was able to move it. And the way Wolfgang's tower came about, this was a perfect little wizard's tower. It was about 60 feet tall and about nine foot, not square inside because it was round inside, but it was only about 9 feet in diameter inside. But it was 3 to 4 stories high with a little spiral staircase. And so you had as much room inside it as a boat. And Wolfgang designed it as a little house. It was one of these little houses. And because it was 3 stories high, he could avoid the building codes in Orange County. And the Orange County building codes are ferocious. So you think, oh, I just gonna get myself a little place in the canyon and build myself a little cabin. That sounds good, but Orange County won't let you. And so Wolfgang, being an engineer, he wanted to build these little places for his cultists and these little towers. And so he figured out, well, I could avoid their building code by building up, straight up, and then it was an ingenious little thing. And he built it with slats, like a barrel. In fact, he actually put barrel staves around the tower. He built several of them, but the one of them was left over in Lab Canyon, and I bought it, but I never could get it out. The problem is, I got it, but I couldn't get it to my property because the canyon was too, the road were too narrow, and nobody would haul it out for me, so I was stuck with it. I just had to let it go. Anyway, so I drew up plans for remembered with Wolfgang's Tower, and I thought about building one myself and putting it on the Rivendell. And we never did it, but we're probably gonna put a yurt up Rivendell as soon as things get normalized, if they ever do. we're gonna put a yurt up at Rivendell. And the other adventure that I'd like to tell you about, besides Wolfgang's Tower, was Black Star Canyon. Now, Black Star Canyon has adventurous place, and I used to hike up there into Black Star, and one day, I was hiking way back up in Black Star, and I was wearing an Earth Day T-shirt and a National Rifle Association cap, baseball cap. The imaginative combination. Here I have all these cuddly little animals in my T-shirt, and this Earth Day, you know, and it's very hippie and very, very warm and fuzzy, you know, environmentalist T-shirt. And then I've got this NRA baseball cap. What a combination. That's when I ran into one of the mountain men of Black Star, one of the hillbillies, Art Tuttle. And confronted Art Tuttle out in front of his place, in Black Star. And he looked at my T-shirt, and he looked at my cap, and you know, and then I looked at him, and I realized that here's a real redneck hillbilly. I mean, you know, and he looks at this, and he said, "That is the damnedest combination I've ever seen." Anybody that will wear a combination like that's got to be somebody I want to know. So Art and I became friends as a result of my crazy T-shirt and hat combination. But Art was a wild man, and he and his family had lived way back in Black Star for I don't know how long, and Art, that guy was really, he was crazy. He liked to go barefoot in the woods, and he was always picking up 9mm ammunition. At the same time, he liked to go barefoot. He liked to shoot at everything with his 9mm automatic, and he was leaving holes all over the place and cutting his bare feet with the cartridge holes. And he had this little off-road four-wheel motorcycle. And we'd get in. I'd get on the back, and riding behind him, and he would go roaring off through the woods with this thing, and driving like a wild man. Anyway, so I made good friends with Art Tuttle, and went out to a lot of family barbecues at his place, his ranch, but he had a rival in the canyon, and his rival was a character called Black Star Bill. And Black Star Bill, but between the two of them, between Tuttle and Black Star Bill, it was like they were feuding all the time and over property and various things. Black Star Bill and Art were like the Hatfields and the McCoys in West Virginia. You know, and Kentucky, they were almost the same kind of hillbilly feuds, and in fact, Art said, one time he said, Pope, he said, I've got a couple acres of land you might want to look at, you might want to buy, and showed them to me. And I said, Art, this borders on Black Star Bill's property. What the hell are you trying to do? get me caught in the crossfire? Anyway, when you walk up the road, Black Star or Canyon Road, when you got to Black Star Bill's place, it was like Rivendell. It was across the creek, and there was a bridge. And you look up at Black Star Bill's place, it looked like you were looking at a Hong Kong slum. I mean, there were chicken coops and old trailers and sheds and wrecked vehicles extending all the way up the hill across the bridge. And it was a sort of a conglomeration. It looked like some kind of a building, but it was all a huge pile of these old vehicles and sheds and everything all kind of lashed together. And this was Black Star Bill's place. And anyway, there was a big sign up on the bridge. There's nothing over here worth your life, you know, and a skull and crossbones. And so I decided I wasn't going to go over and meet Black Star Bill. But oh boy, the stories, Black Star Bill was a legend. And the stories, supposedly, he got the place in Black Star from the sheriff's son. Now, this is the story. So he got... The sheriff's son was kind of a bad boy. And sheriff's sons quite often are, and the sheriff's son, according to the story, is hanging around with Black Star Bill, and the sheriff's son owned this property across the creek that eventually became Black Star Bill's hideout, So supposedly, Black Star Bill and the kid are playing poker, and the kid writes a deed to the house on a napkin, and throws it in the pot. Black Star Bill wins the house. That's the story, kid deed, of the sheriff, the Orange County Sheriff's son. And here's Black Star Bill with this hillside across the creek that he supposedly wins in a poker game on a napkin. And he stays there for years. And there's all kinds of stories about how he makes his living. And I'm not going to repeat them because, you know, I have nothing against Black Star Bill. Personally, I never personally met him, but I heard all these wild stories about him. Of course, a lot of them from Art. And finally, though, a few years back, about 10 years back, I guess, Black Star Bill finally got run out of the canyon, and so did Art Tuttle. Art Tuttle got run out of the canyon for doing what so many canyon people have done, and that's have these trash fires using a 55-gallon drum for an incinerator. And what they do is they take a 55-gallon drum and fill it up with, knock a bunch of holes in it so it can breathe, and then fill it up with a bunch of trash and then set it on fire. Like it becomes like an incinerator. Well, the problem is it starts fires. And boy, the fires, of course, in the canyon, especially during Santa Ana season, that's terrible. So Art started one of these incinerator fires. The fire department got him, and they eventually Art actually shot at a fire truck, and this was he shot at a fire truck. And you don't do this in Orange County. You don't shoot at the fire truck. And because, you know, they they sent the fire truck out to stop one of his incinerator fires, and he started shooting at the fire truck. So that was the end. So Art Tuttle had to leave the canyon. Well, then Black Star Bill was not far behind, because Black Star Bill, they got his septic tank overflowed, and he polluted the creek, and so they got rid of Black Star Bill. That leads us to another interesting story. So Black Star Bill gets run out, and Ark gets run out. So the two feuding hillbillies are no longer in the canyon, and then one of my friends takes over Black Star Bill's area to clean it up. You know, apparently nobody ever honored his napkin deed. You know, and I don't know how somebody. I eventually met the people who got the place, in Black Star Bill's place, and I didn't ask them, you know, about how they got it. I just made friends with them. But anyway, when Black Star Bill's place was being cleaned up, I went out there and went all over it looking for, there were all these rumors about Black Star Bill being into the occult. He was a scientist and all this. The rumors about this. And so I went over the whole place, and all I could find was one broken Kuan Yin statue. Kuan Yin, the Oriental goddess of love and peace. And so I took the statue, put it back together, and took it back and put it up at Rivendell. So it's on our wall of the gods at Rivendell, Black Star Bill's one Kuan Yin statue. That was all that I could find that was esoteric in that whole place. And I went over it very, very carefully. But then our local evangelistic preacher, Larry, who had he had his own little cult, you know, Larry decides that that we need to exorcise Black Star Bill's place. It's full of Satanists, you know. We got to exorcise the place. So I agreed. I said, all right, we'll go out there and we'll exorcise it. I tried to explain to Larry, the fundamentalist preacher, that the reason why he was picking up, as he said, he was picking up all this horrible vibes out there at Black Star Bill's place. And I said, Larry, look, I said, the reason why you're probably picking up these vibrations is that back in the 1920s, one of these old mines in Black Star caved in on a troop of Boy Scouts and killed all of them. So you're picking up, if you're picking up on the tragedy in Black Star, and that's probably what you're picking up on, is those poor dead Boy Scouts. But I said, I told him, I said, Larry, I have not. You know, I've been all over this property, and the only thing I could find was that Kuan Yin statue. I don't think Black Star Bill was a Satanist. I think this is all a lot of BS. Oh, no, they're Satanists. Larry insisted. So we're out there, we're having a picnic lunch out there in Black Star Bill's place, what's left of it, and Larry says, we got to exercise this place. So I said, all right. I reached in my jacket and pulled out my Tibetan purba. And Larry was horrified. He looked at this purba, which, yeah, that's pretty, he is kind of scary looking, this old iron and electromagicum Tibetan purba, you know. So it's an antique, and it looks kind of scary. It's got, you know, Tibetan demons on it. But he's terrified. And all of his and his cultists, they're all looking at this thing. My God, you know, we can't use that. And I said, well, what do you mean? It's a Tibetan purba, you know. But that was the end of the exorcism right there. All he had to do was pull out the permit. Anyway, so we never did find out what happened to Hart and Blackstar and Blackstar Bill. But it was, for a while there, it was kind of exciting. Anyway, I have loved Silverado and the Silverado people, and my good neighbors helped me out during the fire and everything. I just love little Silverado, and of course, Rivendell has just and a beautiful place. And I didn't mention that we also have a out in the parking lot. We have a shed, a tough shed, where that was. So that's kind of our shipping department for our books and all. And then we have an old trailer full of books out there because, you know, we publish. And right now, of course, we're shipping the Yoga Book and Adamson's Quest. Those are our two most recent publications. And they're both at Amazon. And I would really encourage, to go on Amazon, look up Adamson's Quest, and look up Hermetic Yoga Volume 2. And you can order them from Amazon, and we'd very much like you to put on a good review if you would. Anyway, this just about wraps up our praise appreciation of America's House of Magic, Rivendell and Silverado. And so until next week, when we're back with another Hermetic Magic episode, until then, happy holidays and good magic.